championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser. And today, Joe Cook cannot join us. So, in his place is Trey Elling from The Horn, 104.9 The Horn. Trey, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Will. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
No worries. Today, we're going to be going over a bunch of different questions that y'all have sent to us in our mailbag, talking about Texas's upcoming season, talking about the big recruiting weekends we've had, some of the recruiting storylines that are going on. We got a bunch of stuff going on right now, but Trey, we got to talk about what just happened last night in Jackson Hayes getting picked up by the New Orleans Pelicans. I believe that is Texas's fourth big man to go in the past 5 years. 2016, man, what happened there? What happened in 2016?
Yeah, that's right.
Just nothing. Texas is slacking.
That would be, no kidding. But Miles Turner and Jarrett Allen, of course, Mo Bamba last year to Orlando, and now Jackson Hayes, who gets selected 8 overall by Atlanta, which I think is a little bit surprising. A lot of people expected him to go 10 a little bit later, and he's going to end up getting shipped to the New Orleans Pelicans, who, of course, also had the number one overall selection tonight, choosing Zion Williamson, which surprises nobody. But if there's a good fit for Jackson Hayes right now in the NBA, a guy who is still very raw despite what he displayed for the Longhorns in 2018-19, it would be the New Orleans Pelicans. They're a team that has a lot of athleticism on the perimeter. Obviously, Zion Williamson is going to be freakish for the position that he plays at the next level, and they're really looking for big guys right now who can run the floor, which Jackson Hayes can do, and also block shots down low and really be available for those lob types of plays that Jackson Hayes was so good at in Shaka Smart's offense. So I don't think he's going to be a guy playing much more than 10, maybe 15 minutes a night. If he can give you that his first year in the league and really build from there, I think that's a great thing for the Pelicans. But just in terms of the overall fit, I like this a whole lot more versus some of the other teams that were being considered for Jackson Hayes in mock drafts leading up to last night.
Well, I can't think of any team that maybe in 2 or 3 years will be as high-flying as the New Orleans Pelicans, which is hard to really match because you'll have Zion Williamson, and then if you get Jackson Hayes to his full potential, that's the guy who, I don't know if Longhorn fans remember, every pass to Jackson Hayes seemed to be an alley-oop for a dunk. He also is a blocking guy, a guy who can get up in the air and block balls, and that's just kind of been a staple of every Texas big man over the past 5 years, or at least these guys keep on getting drafted. But I can't think of another team right now at the top of my head who will be as high-flying as these two guys can make New Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans is going to be a fun team to watch next year. In the backcourt, they are immediately one of the best defensive teams in the entire league with Lonzo Ball to go along with Drew Holiday. And they have freakish athleticism all over the floor on defense. I think for Jackson Hayes, it's going to be important for him to just continuing to develop overall as a basketball player, but even the shot blocking, which is one of his biggest strengths right now, he can get better as a shot blocker too. You don't necessarily have to volleyball spike every ball that you're able to get to, send it into the third row. Sometimes
but it's more fun that way, Trey.
It is more fun, and it leads to more highlights at times, but you also want to be able to control a lot of those to gain possession for your team because you do want to get it up the floor. You want to push the pace if you're Alvin Gentry, so I'm sure that's something that they'll teach him. But Jackson Hayes is also going to have to get better as a rebounder, and he's going to have to develop a little bit as an offensive player as well. He is a good free throw shooter, so they want him to remain aggressive to the bucket, but I foresee him starting to develop, if he is a guy who can stick in this league, developing a game that does see him take jump shots in that 6 to 8 to maybe even 10-foot range.
Right. So what do you think right now of Texas having these 4 out of the 5 years, having a big man go in the top, was it 10 in the draft? I don't remember where Jackson or where Jarrett Allen went, but at least in the first round, and not being able to really put it together.
Yeah, Jarrett Allen went just outside the top 20. And
I think it was 22.
The unfortunate reality of what has been subpar coaching and a slight waste of big guy talent over the last few years. It's you know, disappointing for me as somebody who's rooted for Longhorn basketball my entire life, but it's also the reality of the situation that this team does not do enough with its talented bigs. They just kind of ask those guys to sit down low to try and find open space to be ready for the alley-oops and then to really protect the rim on defense. And that has not been a formula that has worked with any sort of consistency for Shaka Smart and the Texas offense or the defense for that matter. Now, the defense is further along, of course, than the Shaka Smart offense is. But considering that this has been a fringe tourney team, having missed the tourney in what is now do or die time now for Shaka Smart and the Texas Longhorns. And I don't know how much confidence I have heading into next season, considering that not only do they lose Jackson Hayes, but they also lose their top two scorers from this year's basketball team with Kerwin Roach, a guy who was a four-year starter, and Dylan Osutkowski, who turned into one of the more consistent players for this team down the stretch as well.
Right, and I said this in our podcast with Tim Preston and Johnny Brashear, Bitter White Guy, that we don't know if losing Kerwin Roach and Dylan Osutkowski is like losing Chris Boye, where, hey, it's a bad thing, but also maybe a good thing. You can't tell just yet if losing one of those guys, even though, you know, they're really talented, might actually propel your team forward by forcing them to pick somebody else to lead the team.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kerwin Roach, even as a senior, was a guy who seemed to shoot himself and his squad in the foot at times, especially at the end of games, to cost them a chance at victory. The game at Fog Allen versus Kansas this year is one that comes to mind. And there were just too many examples like that throughout his career. So I certainly understand what you and those guys are saying with addition by subtraction. But the bottom line also is that they have to find other guys who can score the points that will now be lacking without Osutkowski, Roach, and then, of course, Jackson Hayes.
Well, if any year is going to do it, it has to be next year for Shaka Smart. And we'll see. We'll see what happens there. And before we get into the mailbag, I really quickly want to ask you, which finals did you enjoy more as a neutral fan, the NHL finals or the NBA finals? Both were first-time champions, and both were came down to pretty solid series against two teams that were very, very heavyweight champions. It's like David and Goliath on both sides. Which one did you enjoy more? And, you know I'm judging you because I'm a Blues fan.
Of course, and it hurts me to say this because I think sports is better off with the longtime losers, and we've lost another one now with the St. Louis Blues and the Toronto Raptors, for that matter. But considering that Golden State was so undermanned, despite the fact that that was a big-time upset with Toronto winning the championship, I will always prefer a Stanley Cup final that goes to seven games, a hard-fought affair like what we saw with the Bruins and the Blues.
Hell yeah.
And congratulations to you on that
one. Hell yeah. Dude, still living it up. Still living it up. And I do want to get you, because this has been an argument between Joe and I. Which is a better product, the NHL or the NBA? Putting you on the spot.
A better product. If we're talking about off-season, then you got to go NBA.
Oh, obviously.
If we're talking regular season, you got to go NHL. If we're talking postseason, I think you got to go NHL too. Look at the competitiveness of the first three rounds of each league's respective playoffs. You had more close games in the NHL than you had in the NBA. You had more games that went, if not all the way to seven games, closer to seven games in rounds one through three in the NHL than you did in the NBA. And you also don't have the TMZ-esque drama in the NHL that you do in the NBA. And honestly, that is obnoxious to me. If it was just about the games, I would be okay with that.
See, there are people who argue that that makes it a better product, that you have that type of drama behind the scenes. But to me, as you said, that just makes it obnoxious and annoying. I don't know. That's just me, though.
If anything, to me, it feels like it allows the sport to appeal to the lowest common denominator a little bit more. And I hate to be critical like that, but I'm sorry, it's the truth. When you put 2 and 3 days in between your games to try and build that off-court drama that much more, it takes away from whatever momentum was built up by the actual games themselves. It bothers me to no end. BK and I have talked about this on the midday show, and the NBA did a better job of this in the Eastern and Western Conference Finals of putting a day between games. And then for whatever reason, during the finals, they switched back to that method where you had 2 or 3 days in between most games. And unfortunately, I think that that kills the desire of a lot of people to stay tuned to what's going on the court.
Well, and I know this is a Texas-centric podcast, but one last thing is sportsmediawatch.com is one of my favorite places to look at. We were trying to figure out, all right, hey, how does a different sporting event do compared to last year, the year before that, and other sporting events. And comparatively to the years before, the NBA, their ratings per year have been going down. Small percentages, like 2-3%, but it's going downwards while the NHL is going upwards. And that's kind of, I feel, indicative of people understanding, hey, this is a lot more fun to watch, and hey, I'm getting tired of watching a drama show. So it's like a Bravo show.
Yeah, and you know, the NBA was hurt by the fact that LeBron James was not only on the West Coast, but his team really wasn't that good this year. The NBA Finals numbers were down, and I think they would have been down regardless, but they were deflated a little bit more, if you will, by the fact that the audience numbers in Toronto aren't reflected in the Nielsen ratings as they show up in the States. So it's not as dire as I think some people are trying to explain it to be. But at the same time, I do agree with your point that a lot of people just don't have the patience for the NBA. They have become disillusioned, much like I was back in 2006, by a league that they see as barely more viable than the WWE, while also recognizing that at least the WWE is upfront about what it truly is. Exactly. It's more about the sports entertainment than the actual sport itself. And basketball still tries to maintain that it's something that it's not and really hasn't been since, I don't know, the 1990s era Bulls with Michael Jordan.
And again, I know we're kind of beating this point to death, but a comparative between the NBA final Game 6 and the NHL's Game 7, this year's Game 7 for the NHL was a rating as 3.0. The NBA was a 13.2, but here's the difference between the two. The NBA's 13.2 is down 6% from 2016 and down 17% from 2015, whereas the NHL's is up 11% from last year and up 14% from the year before that. So you're seeing a dramatic change in the, you know, I don't know if it's a dramatic change, but you're seeing a change of, hey, a lot more people are enjoying the raw entertainment of hockey versus the NBA's, you know, drama show. But let's go ahead and get off of that right now and get into the mailbag. We have a lot of questions that were given to us by the listeners, and we'll start off with one of the main listeners, one of the guys who everybody on Texas Twitter knows, and Chris Bennett. And Chris Bennett asks us, first off, Chris Bennett, he listens to every freaking show. I don't know how he has the time to do this, but Chris Bennett, he asks, do you think Texas is getting too much preseason hype, or is the hype where it should be? We haven't seen this much hype since before the 2019 season, coming off of 08. He also says, congrats to your Blues. Keep up the great work. So, what do you think?
CB, who, by the way, I like to call the associate producer for all of Austin media, regardless of the format, radio, television, podcasting, whatever it is, CB is there to help hook you up with stories, to help promote you on Twitter, and we are all very grateful for a guy that we all hypothesize might actually be a computer program because the dude never sleeps.
I think
he is. As far as the hype that Texas is receiving heading into the 2019 season, you know, it's funny because you see a mixed bag. You see some people that have them ranked in the top 10, and, you know, I've even seen a couple of polls that have them outside the top 15 right now. So I think that is indicative of some having valid questions about the amount that Texas has to replace on both sides of the football, but especially on defense. But for those who do have Texas ranked inside or around the top 10 right now, they look at an offense that is going to be very potent in 2019 if Sam Ellinger can stay healthy. He has more weapons around him. The attack is going to be a little bit more balanced, too, because they have more talent in the backfield to go along with him. And a lot of us who follow Texas feel like, although there may be some growing pains early on, the guys replacing the 8 starters lost on the defensive side of the ball have the ability to be not only as good, but maybe even better by the end of the 2019 season. When you couple that with the fact that a lot of teams in the Big 12 are replacing a lot in terms of starting quarterbacks, or in a lot of cases, head coaches, to where there's new systems being put in place as well, the opportunity is there for the taking for the Longhorns. And I even feel that way about Oklahoma. Look, we all think that Lincoln Riley is a fantastic head coach in Norman, and he has proven himself with what he can do with that offense and developing quarterbacks. But he's facing a unique challenge this year as well on that side of the football, losing as many guys on that talented offensive line from the last couple of years. They have to reload on the offensive line. Jalen Hurts is not as good of a quarterback as Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray is. And even though Alex Grinch is coming in on the defensive side of the ball as the coordinator there, you think he's eventually going to be able to get that thing turned around. He's still working with a lack of talent on that side of the ball, too. So I feel like Oklahoma is going to come back down to earth. And if there is one obvious team out there right now who seems to have that opportunity, that Big 12 championship opportunity for the taking, it is the Longhorns. And if they win the Big 12 championship, sorry, they are a top 10 football team in 2019.
Yeah. And welcome to my show where everybody thinks I'm the pessimist, but I feel like this is realism talking. I am less optimistic about the defense as you are, at least starting off here. And I believe having to go into LSU, where Texas usually gets their mojo around the third game for their defense, the second game here is LSU, I'm expecting there to be some bumps and bruises along the way. And Texas's defense is, you know, they're missing basic their entire defensive line, their entire linebacking core, both their cornerbacks. I do think that the guys replacing them have a higher floor, but the ceiling, I don't know. The ceiling could be the floor. We don't know yet. That's the problem with this defense. And going forward, I'm not as down on Oklahoma as you are. I know last year we said Kyler Murray is nowhere near the quarterback of Baker Mayfield, but it turns out, you know, really, he wasn't that great the beginning over spring practices and whatnot, but somehow Lincoln Riley turned him into an incredible quarterback, and that system is just dialing quarterbacks up. Jalen Hurts, I think, is going to be look better than he did in the past. You say they have a lack of talent on defense at Oklahoma, but the number of stars they have on that defense is preposterous. And just to be clear, I'm not talking about number of star players. I'm talking about the number of stars from their composite rankings when they were recruits. There's a lot of raw talent on that team. So we'll see. We'll see what Oklahoma can do. But I do think don't get me wrong. I think Texas is a good team. Are they top 10? Probably just on the outside of that. I think one of the preseason polls I really agree with most is Brett McMurphy putting Texas at number 12.
College football is a sport where you can get away with outscoring your opponent. And I think Texas is built this year to make up for the lack of consistency on defense at the start of the season with the ability to outscore their opponents. That's how dynamic this offense is going to be in 2019. That's what I think you see happen versus LSU, a team who, by the way, is having to replace some huge pieces on the defensive side of the ball. So they're going to have to lean a little bit more on their offense, at least to start the season off, minus Devin White in the middle of that defense, minus the lockdown cornerback abilities of Greedy Williams on the outside as well. Both guys, high-round draft picks in the NFL a couple months ago. And LSU returns a lot on offense. You know they're going to be loaded at the running back position. And Joe Burrow is a guy who did make plays last year, especially with his legs. They are shifting to a new offense this year, one that relies on more of that quick passing game to try and take advantage of run pass opportunities to utilize Joe Burrow's legs. I think they are going to be less of a quick strike offense than Texas is in that game in Austin in week two of the season. And ultimately, that's why the Longhorns win what I am calling right now a shootout, where both teams probably end up in the high 20s or 30 point range.
Don't get me wrong. I think Texas beats LSU, mainly because Todd Orlando has these, I don't want to call them simple, but simple offenses down to a T. He is able to take teams like Georgia, like USC, like LSU's offenses, and just make them one-dimensional, especially teams that love to run the ball, like Georgia and like LSU. That's what he does best. So I do think, as you said, Texas probably wins this one, but it's teams like Oklahoma, and then there's also the inconsistency that Texas has shown year after year, or at least Tom Herman has, where he has that one game, it's a head scratch. You don't know what happened there. Mm-hmm. It's stuff like that that makes me think, you know, hey, this team might not yet be in the top 10. They might. I think the year that you need to look at, though, is not this coming year, but the year after that. I think that's when Texas actually have a legitimate chance at becoming real big contenders. So I think, yeah, hey, there should be some hype coming into this, but it should not equal the hype of the 2009 season.
Yeah, in terms of competing for a national championship, I agree with you. They're a year away. Now, they could definitely make the college football playoff in 2019, but I do not believe that they are ready to compete with Alabama and or Clemson this year. You're right, no. 2020 is the target if they're going to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's when I see both the offense and the defense clicking and going at full speed. The next question we have is from It's J. Crow. He asks, is Sam Ellinger a Texas legend? Will he be a legend? And is there another future legend on the team or committed to the team right now? RPB332 asks a similar question. After Ellinger, who is the next quarterback to win the job convincingly? So we'll start off with, hey, is he already a Texas legend or will he be one? I think the answer is pretty clear, but we'll see if you have a hot take here.
You know, when it's all said and done, he'll be looked at as a Texas legend. Heck, he was already kind of a Texas legend when he committed to the Longhorns with the picture of a toddler Sam Ellinger wearing nothing but overalls and flashing the hook'em signs. That's legend status stuff right there. You also take into account just how much of an orange blood he is and some of the big games that he's already won for this football team and his willingness to be the alpha, not just for this football team, but for the entire program as he is representing them in post-game interviews and things like that as well. I hate to dub a guy a legend while he is only halfway through his college career, but I said last year he was a superstar in the making, and I think that if you end up as a bona fide superstar, that does mean that you end up as a legend when it's all said and done. So I think we do see him lead them to a Big 12 championship this year, and there's always the possibility of a national championship, assuming he sticks around for his fourth and final year here on the 40 acres.
Right. I think anybody who was paying half attention to the Longhorns could realize that Sam Ellinger was going to be special even after his struggles during his freshman season.
Yeah.
But I don't think I can say that he's a legend yet, like you said. There's still a chance that, you know, he doesn't really step up after this year. I mean, there's a chance. Hey, it's just something that could happen, and he becomes a guy who's like Chris Sims or Major Applewhite, who he's a good quarterback, but he's not a legend. He's not everybody is remembering, oh, man, you remember the Sam to Colin Johnson connection, or when Sam Ellinger took it 5 yards to win a national championship? He's not on that level quite yet, but he is a legend so far in that he is living basically every Longhorn's childhood dream of becoming the quarterback for the team and turning them around and winning some big games like Oklahoma, the Sugar Bowl against a big SEC team. He's doing everything that, you know, you would want to do as a child. What I would grow up in my yard and practice doing. Beating Oklahoma on a last second kick. Well, I don't know if I was kicking it. Maybe I was. I don't know. But he's a guy who kind of embodies everybody's feelings about the team. Will he be a legend? I think he already will be that for everybody else, and probably a good, a better spokesperson for the team than Baker Mayfield is now for Oklahoma. He's already taken the high road on, I don't know, what would you call this controversy? I don't know what you would call it. With Baker Mayfield talking chalk and trash on Oklahoma's radio, which, by the way, real quick, I want to know your thoughts on that. What did you think about Baker Mayfield taking shots at Sam Ehlinger and his Westlake heritage?
Oh, you know, that's Baker Mayfield. I'm not too rankled by it. I've gone to the Texas OU game up at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas enough to know that I need to embrace these sorts of moments, because it's part of what makes the rivalry between the Longhorns and Sooners the best in all of college football. Baker Mayfield is that alpha who is not afraid to shoot from the hip. And when he's put on the spot like that and asked a question about whether Texas is back and about Sam Ehlinger, he's going to give his blunt opinions. Whether or not they're right is a totally different matter, but it's also amusing to see him harken back to the high school rivalry. The irony, Will, is that those two guys are very similar in terms of just how brash they can be as those alpha leaders. Now, I would say that Sam uses a little bit more tact when he goes about attacking his opponent verbally. But at the same time, Baker Mayfield knows that he has an audience and Longhorn fans that is very easily triggered by those types of comments. And sure enough, here we are more than 24 hours later, and we all have to thank him for providing us a day's worth of talking points with what he had to say about the Longhorns being back and also Sam Ehlinger.
Right. Sam Ehlinger makes his attacks subtle shots, like after Kyler Murray, you know, saying what he had to say on the field after the Red River shootout. And, well, he says all the right things, but it's like it has that little thing behind it where it's like that's a stab at Kyler Murray. So it's sort of the subtle stabs that Sam Ehlinger takes, and he understands it. You know it. He says it with a smirk. But we'll go ahead and say, after Sam Ehlinger, who is the future legend on this team? Is he committed to the team right now, or is he on it? Who is that next quarterback who will take over the job convincingly? Who do you think?
No offense to Casey Thompson, but I think the guy that ends up taking over whenever Sam leaves is going to end up being Roschon Johnson. Johnson is a little bit more of a power runner, like what Tom Herman looks for out of his quarterbacks. And I like what I think he's going to be able to develop into as a passer as well, especially under Tom Herman and Tim Beck's tutelage. But let's not sleep on Hudson Card either. Mm-hmm. When it's all said and done, Hudson Card is going to end up being an early enrollee. He is a guy who is going to very quickly grasp the offense, and he does have a slick level of athleticism about him as well, as a guy who played wide receiver earlier on in his career at Lake Travis too. But I think Roschon Johnson is the first guy to get that crack at the quarterback position, and I think he's going to be a good one. That'll be followed by Hudson Card.
Yeah, I think you also have to look at Jaquinen Jackson. I don't know if they're going to take over the job after Sam Ehlinger leaves immediately, but I think maybe given another year, I think maybe Casey Thompson or Sean Johnson takes over the job immediately. But given a year after that, when they're redshirt sophomores, I think they'll be more than enough ready to be better or in contention to take over that job convincingly. Hudson Card or Jaquinen Jackson, whoever comes in and is more prepared. Jaquinen Jackson, he's got more athleticism, I think, than Roschon Johnson, but he's more raw as a passer. And Hudson Card is just, boy, that guy can fit a football through a pinhole. So
people don't like hearing this out of me, but I think that Jaquinen Jackson ends up changing positions after he gets to Texas. They'll give him a chance to win the quarterback job or to stick in that quarterback room, but I think he'll eventually see the writing on the wall and realize that he is better off if he wants to see the field sooner rather than later switching positions.
Yeah, and I might even go to defense or I'm not quite sure. He can play anywhere on the field. So I completely agree. Yep. And when I've talked to Jaquinen Jackson, he has told me, yeah, hey, I'm okay going wherever they need me to go as long as it's on my terms. So they're going to let him try out for that quarterback position, as you said, and then slowly but surely he'll realize, I'm not getting too far up the depth chart here. Maybe I'll take a look at another position, and that'll be on his terms. Speaking of the depth chart, Trey, another question from RPB332. who are the best 11 on defense at the start of the year, and how good or bad of a job will Orlando do getting that best 11 on the field? Who do you think, you know, we know who the safeties are in Caden Stearns and Brandon Jones, but who do you think are the rest of the guys? Who are those other nine players?
I think you have Anthony Cook and Jalen Green at the quarterback position. I think Josh Thompson starts out at that nickel spot. Two of the linebackers are going to be Joseph Osai at the B-backer, Jeffrey McCulloch, likely at Rover. Along the defensive line, you have any combination of Taquan Graham, Gerald Wilbon, and then possibly Bimage at one of those other end positions. The big question mark for me, and I know that there are some other conversations to be had about potential dudes along the defensive line, but the biggest question for me is what happens to either that third linebacker spot, that middle linebacker position, or if you spin that into that joker position and roll with more of that at the start of the year. If a guy like Adelia Adeoye does not come in and take those snaps by the horns whenever fall practice gets going, because they have a dearth of talent at safety. Those big guys who are also really athletic, the DeMarvion Overshones and B.J. Fosters, who are just champing at the bit to get on the field. And if those guys can play closer to the line of scrimmage, if they have no problem shrugging off, fighting off blocks from offensive linemen to get to the ball carrier, whether it's the running back or rushing the passer, or occasionally dropping back into coverage as well to defend against bigger-bodied guys, whether it's tight ends or maybe running backs coming out of the backfield, Orlando won't flinch to do that as well. That has been a valuable defense for him over these last couple of years, and I'm sure it's one that he's looking at as a potential fail-safe or stopgap in 2019 too.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to throw in Caleb Johnson, Juwan Mitchell, those two JUCO players in there and see, hey, what can you give us at that position? I also think, you know, as good as Josh Thompson has been, I think you replace him at nickel with B.J. Fosters, who I think that's his natural position. That should be, at least. I think that's where he can take over and be both the run stopper and the pass stopper in that flat area underneath all the zones. So I think that's where you get – that's where I differ with you there. But I kind of agree with everything. And Josh McCulloch, man, that guy surpassed my expectations during the spring game. That's the only thing I could really take away from that spring game is, hey, you know, okay, we're good at the rubber position with Josh McCulloch. You know, and Joseph Osai is just going to be an absolute beast. I think he's going to have a coming out party next year. So how good of a job does Orlando do getting those best 11? I think he's, you know, given past years, I think he's done a pretty darn good job of getting the best 11 on the field whenever he needs to. And like you said, getting that joker position in there with Marvin Overshone could be something that he pulls in this year if you can't get that Mac position ready, as you said. So I completely agree with you, man. You killed it. So I can't say much more. The next question we have is from Exo Entropy, and it hits on something that's going to be a big problem for the Texas offense next year. You say, well, we're saying it's going to be nigh unstoppable, but there's one big part of this offense that is a huge question mark. Running back depth, Exo Entropy says, is obviously a big concern next season. But there's a lot of potential in Ingram and Whittington as RB1 and RB2. But we haven't seen much discussion about Daniel Young's development as his projected reliability or his projected reliability as RB3. I can't help but feel like Young fell off the face of the earth after ending the 2017 season on a high note with a solid performance in the Texas Bowl. Do you think he realizes some of this potential Herman saw as the steal of the class in 2019? And I'm going to add something to this. Or do you think they go out and get another transfer running back? What do you think?
I think it's probably too late in the calendar year to go out and find another grad transfer, even at the running back position. But I think they're also going on in the running back room right now, not only with Keyonte Ingram having put on 10 to 15 good pounds in Yancey McKnight's offseason conditioning program, But Jordan Whittington, looking like such a natural fit at running back as the early enrollee, got to go through spring practices. And dare I say, Kirk Johnson may be a viable third stringer, a guy who can come in as a nice change of pace.
That
can do good things. I know, knock on a lot of wood right now, who can do some good things in the run and the passing game too. And yeah, you can't forget about Daniel Young altogether. Unfortunately for Daniel, I think he's going to be relegated to Sam Ellinger's lead blocker on those QB power plays on third and fourth and short yardage, whether it's to get a first down or to get a get into the end zone. But we've also seen Daniel Young 2 years ago as a guy who was a reliable runner for this team. The big thing for him is whether or not he can hold on to the football. So hopefully, if and when he does get that opportunity in 2019, where he turns into more of a feature back, even if it's for a couple of series, that he becomes reliable in terms of not coughing the ball up, because that's the sort of mistake that the coaches are going to have a very short leash with anybody who is guilty of that. I don't care if you're Keontae Ingram, Daniel Young, Colin Johnson. If you are costing your team the football, if you're coughing it up and giving it to the other team, especially if you're allowing them a short field in return, the coaches don't have much patience for that. And that's what ultimately got Daniel Young in the doghouse over the last few years.
Yeah, and he hasn't really come out of it since then. I think on top of that, he has to be a lot more reliable as a running back in getting yards. There are some times where, hey, he breaks out a 30-yard run and runs some guy over like we saw last year, but there's other times where he just runs in the back of the offensive line, can't get his find his way out of the trash, and gets pulled down for a loss of 1 yard. Whereas you see Keontae Ingram on the other side consistently getting positive yardage, where you see, you know, Trey Watson last year consistently getting positive yardage. We've seen a lot from Jordan Whittington, his ability to burst out multiple times. So that's what I think you're getting out of those two guys, RB1 and RB2, versus Daniel Young. And that's where I think, on top of him needing to hold on to the ball, which has been a huge selling point for Tom Herman, or a big thing he harps on since the moment he got here, but on top of that, he needs to become more of a reliable running back before he sees any more time or any consistency or reliability as RB3. Plus, you know, there's no, what is it, Henry Melton, where, hey, we're going to put you on the offensive, you know, on the goal line situations, just let you run over people. That would be his job, but you have Sam Ellinger for that. So I don't know if you really need him for that.
No, especially with the fumble thing hanging over his head. And you're going to go Ellinger 10 times out of 10 in that situation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The next question we have here, we already did the brief outlook on basketball and baseball, so it's J. Crow asks a pretty tricky question, and who is Texas's next commit? And I say that's tricky because, man, it's a crapshoot at this point. You ask any major recruiting website, hey, who do you think commits next, and they'll try to tell you, but I don't think, having been in this business, It's a crapshoot. You can never really tell who can do it. You know, Jaquinen Jackson kind of came out of nowhere for some of us. You know, not really, but like a few weeks before, it's like, wow, okay, we didn't know he was going to do that. But sure, he came out of the woodwork. It could be Texas gets some big commitment at the end of this pool party weekend. Here it's a huge weekend with a bunch of guys coming in, like we have two commits in Jaden Holaby and Logan Parr, but you have Bijan Robinson coming in for an official visit. You have Bryson Washington, who is high on both Texas and Oklahoma, for an official visit. Keaton Crawford, another guy who is high on Texas for an official visit. You have Keely Ringo coming in. I don't think he's going to be a commit. You have a bunch of different guys coming in. We'll get more on the list after in a little bit, but a bunch of guys coming in who they could potentially pull the trigger. You don't know yet. It's up in the air, but it's something to keep an eye on with all of these big names and all of this energy being on campus over this next weekend. But I don't think that Texas gets anything really anytime soon. And if it is, I'm going to guess, if I had to take a shot in the dark here, a guy like Bryson Washington, or maybe even Chad Lindberg or something towards the end of the summer. What do you think, Trey?
Chris Thompson is a guy that would love to see him commit. you know, considering that Texas has done such a good job of establishing themselves back in the DFW area and seem to be in really good standing with Duncanville High School right now, and they have prioritized both of the Duncanville guys, one of whom has already dropped. If Thompson goes next, I think that would be fantastic news. Seems like he's really high on Texas, but I have to admit that when I see guys like you who cover this for a living throwing your hands up, not totally certain what's going on, I feel like any guesses that I'm going to throw out there are also going to be very much a stab in the dark, Will.
Yeah, you could have a guy like Prince Dorba as well. I don't know when, I can't think, remember off the top of my head his timeline. I think Chris Thompson is a good call because you have Jaquinnen Jackson out there already, a teammate who could be pushing him toward to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's a guy, Quentin Johnson, who's coming in this weekend, who I think it might be one of the best wide receivers in the state. There's a bunch of guys who, you know, could happen, could not. We'll see what happens.
I feel like spring and early summer official visit weekends are a little bit like spring football for me. Not spring practice that we see colleges participating in all across the country in the March and April months. I'm talking about the XFL, USFL, the AAF sorts of leagues, yeah, where I get my fill during the regular time for football during the fall. And I kind of feel that way about these official visit weekends in the springtime now. Like, we need to be able to decompress during this time. And I know that these official visit weekends are good for business for you guys over at the Football Brainiacs, and of course with Joe and Justin and Eric and the crew over at Inside Texas as well. But man, I'm feeling a little bit of recruiting fatigue having to follow all these different names at a time of year where normally we got a little bit of a break on those things. And maybe you did have a pool party or a summer camp or something like that. But we're having to pay much closer attention to it now.
Oh, yeah. And then they change the next year and the year after that and the year after that. And hey, you know, mm-hmm. pretty soon you're starting to feel like, wow, this kid is 15 years old and what, I'm 25? Or time is catching up to us. So it's weird, but intriguing at the same time. It's why a lot of people love it. The next question, though, is one that I feel like most Texas fans really want answered. And what is the class rank for Texas when it's all said and done in 2020? Another question by It's J. Crow. What are you feeling? What's this year? Throw me a number.
I feel like they'll end up in the top five somewhere. They've already done such a great job with the offensive line recruiting. We know what they've done at the quarterback position. Jaquinden Jackson looked at as a project at quarterback, but he is one of the top athletes in the country. And I think before it's all said and done, yeah, Texas finishes with a top five class with the potential to go top three. It's hard to call them top three, though, just because Clemson and Alabama and even Georgia are so damn consistent year in and year out as it comes to landing these four and five star recruits. But I think if Tom Herman finishes with that top 5 to 7 class, he's doing great things and continuing to take this program in the right direction. What do you think?
I think if you get a guy like Johnny Wilson out of Calabasas, California, if you pull him away from Oregon, and he has visited Texas now, he's in Texas right now as we record this, and he is here, I think it's the second time in 2 months, and it's unofficial, so he still has an official he's coming for. But if you can pull him away from Oregon, who's probably the team that they're going to, you know, be going against, and that's going to be difficult because Oregon has ways of influencing. I think Texas has a good shot at another top five finish. They need some five stars to really get in there. Chad Lindbergh's taken a hit in his ranking. They do have, I mean, they're a solid class. Don't get me wrong. They're going to get a solid class. But the names that they need to get, like Princely Umanmielen, and Prince Dorba. Every time I say Prince Umanmielen's name, I feel like I'm Arnold Schwarzenegger. Umanmielen. And Vernon Broughton, even if they get all those guys, yeah, it's a bunch of four stars. It's not really going to push you up into the range of UGA, Alabama, and Clemson, who is just pulling in at this point, 7 5 stars and crazy things. But if you can get a guy like Kelee Ringo and Johnny Wilson, if you can pull those twos off, then I feel like Texas, yeah, hey, they can swim with the big fish now. So I feel like that's what you need to get into that top five. Until then, I think you're outside of it, at least in this class, because you know, past classes, they've been able to get those multiple five-star recruits. They'll get one,
yeah,
but
I think
they need two.
Even if you finish a little bit outside the top five, it's far from the end of the world. Just keep doing a good job of developing these guys on both sides of the ball, and you can take the high three and the four-star guys and turn them into quality caliber players, and you continue building the program incrementally to where eventually you do catch the attention of the high four and five-star guys on a more consistent basis, like what Nick Saban is doing at Bama, like what Dabo Swinney is doing at Clemson, and what Kirby Smart is starting to do at Georgia, which, by the way, that win in the Sugar Bowl several months ago has got to ring in the eyes and ears of some recruits right now, Zachary Evans notwithstanding.
Yeah, and Texas is still in. I mean, if you look at the safety board for Texas, Texas is in really good shape for a lot of really big names like Lanthan Ransom, Chris Thompson Jr., as you said, Xavier Alford, and Bryson Washington. All four of those guys could help Texas achieve that at least top 10 finish. Beyond that, you have a bunch of different names all around the board that if you land them, damn, Texas is looking pretty in this class. And it's just, it's a matter of getting it going and getting Jaquinin Jackson going. Hey, that's something that's going to help start this ball down the hill. So we'll see what goes on here, but I do agree. I think they're a top 10 class at the end of 2020. I think this staff is too good at recruiting to not have that. Speaking of this staff, they are putting on another pool party. I think this is their third year in a row. I don't remember if Strong had this off the top of my head, but it is something that has become sort of a staple of the summer for Texas recruiting. It is getting in all the big names, all of the big names. I mean, you already had guys like Zachary Evans come in this weekend and Vernon Broughton come in this week. But you're having a guy like Bijan Robinson, who has become the new hotness for Texas Longhorn fans, who recruit Knicks, coming in on his official visit. Bryson Washington, a guy just named. Kelee Ringo coming in. Johnny Wilson coming in. Xavier Alford, another guy coming in. Jahari Rodgers and Joshua Eaton, cornerbacks coming in. And then a whole bunch of 2021 talent. It just seems like this weekend is one of those weekends that really gets Texas recruiting rolling.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. At the start of this month, we heard from plenty of people that thought this was going to be a month filled with good moves for Longhorn fans. And here we are with 10 days left in the month. The dead period starts on Monday, and I think a lot of us are still in that holding pattern of hoping to see more. Look, Jaquinin Jackson was a great piece of news for Texas a couple weeks ago, but I think we were expecting a little bit more in the way of guys giving their verbal pledges to Tom Herman. Hasn't happened yet. Doesn't happen this weekend. Certainly not the end of the world, but they can go a long ways in securing a spot in guys' top threes, if not gaining those commitments with another successful pool party weekend. And we know what this weekend has meant to the state of recruiting on the 40 acres the last 2 years now. So I expect it to be a big positive for them this year too.
I agree. I think Texas needs one of those A&M out of nowhere commitments where just like, hey, wow, I can't believe he just committed. He wasn't even thinking about committing and he just committed right on the spot in the office. That's crazy. So Texas needs something like that. If there's any weekend to do it, it's this weekend when you have all of these big names all in the same place and you can whisper in their ears and tell them sweet nothings while they're while they're on campus having the time of their lives. So the next big question we have here, and it's the last one we have, RPB 332, another big question, and it makes sense with you having Bijan Robinson on campus and Zachary Evans on campus and Jace McClellan on campus last weekend. It seems like the Horns have an audience with every major running back recruit in 2020. But if they miss on Jace McClellan and Bijan Robinson, what does the backup plan look like? Trey, I don't know your knowledge on, you know, how the deep number of running backs on this in this state, but this year in this state is pretty darn full of really good running backs in this state. Now, are they as good as guys like Zach Evans, Kendall Milton, Bijan Robinson, Jace McClellan, Seth McGowan? Not quite. But if they have to do what they have to do some years, which is, hey, if they miss on a big guy, go backwards and take a guy from TCU or Baylor or Texas Tech, this is the year to do that at the running back position.
Well, that strategy kind of backfired on them last year, where they put too much focus on out-of-state guys who ended up spurning them in the week leading up to National Signing Days 1 and 2 that left them without a viable backup plan. So hopefully they are working several different angles to go along with the top dogs that they consider to be the biggest prizes at that running back spot. Bijan Robinson looks like a very special player out of Arizona. They seem to be in good standing with him right now, although he went and visited USC over the last couple of days. And based on following his social media, and boy, how creepy is that of me as a 41-year-old man following the social media of a 17-year-old kid who's on a college recruiting,
par for the course this
recruiting visit. USC has an allure about them, especially for a kid who is already kind of from the West Coast. So you do need to have more options in terms of that backup plan. You do need to be cultivating those relationships with those other running backs, that even if they haven't received that offer just yet, you're in a great standing with those kids, and you understand that if it comes down to it and you do need to turn to that to get a second or maybe even a third viable running back prospect in the class, you can do so versus being stuck like they were last year, where they went after a couple of top guys in Trey Sanders. The other dude's name is escaping me, who ended up spurning them as well. And other than the kid that they got out of Georgia, Noah Kane, thank you very much for that. And other than the Brown kid that they got out of Georgia, who suffered an unfortunate medical incident, they really didn't have anything else at running back. Now, they lucked out a little bit with Jordan Whittington, a guy that they looked at as a flex sort of player, an athlete, after what we saw him do in the state championship game, that they could try him out at running back. And thank goodness that looks like it's a very natural fit for him. And he's also a guy who can move around the field and do different things. But that's a situation you don't want to have to luck into on a year-to-year basis. So I think they'll do a better job of formulating a game plan to go after those primary guys, the Bijan Robinsons, perhaps Zach Evans again, although I'm not sure if he is worth the attention, and some of the other top dogs, while also keeping tabs on those lower four-star and three-star guys.
Yeah, and speaking of Zach Evans, real fast note on that, him coming in. Hey, if he wants to come in, let him. Let him, you know, you have nobody in campus on campus right now. It's not affecting anything. If he comes in, because I've seen a lot of Longhorn fans being like, wow, why are they even talking to this kid? It's going to mess with other people. It won't mess with other guys, but what it will do is, hey, if you have an outside shot of this, if there is still a chance of getting Zachary Evans, who might be the best running back to come out of Texas since Jonathan Gray, before Jonathan Gray had the Achilles injury, or a guy like Adrian Peterson, you take a shot at it. He is that good. He is worth the attention. It's not going to do anything. It's not that big of a deal that he came in. It's not going to hurt anything. It just helps. Off that point, there's guys like Taj Brooks in state who they could take a look at, who is really a TCU guy where I'm expecting in the fall. Or you could go out of state to Georgia or to Arizona or anywhere that you have built up some of these good relationships so far. Texas has Tim Beck in their pocket, who has been absolutely killing it in Arizona. They have ties, deep ties into Georgia now. California, you have ties there now. You have places that have a lot of great talent without much, you know, they have a lot of great talent. So I think that if they fall flat on their face with Jace McClellan, Bijan Robinson, you look at Stan Drayton, you ask, what are you doing here? And you go, use Tim Beck to scour Arizona, or you use Jason Washington to scour Georgia. That's the plan there. That's the backup plan. So I think it's our mailbag for the day. You got any thoughts leaving off here? Any Texas thoughts you want to leave the folks off with? Anything on the top of your mind?
Longhorn fans, just get excited for a fun 2019 season. And that's contingent on Sam Ellinger staying healthy. But I think he does. I think we see an offense that is capable of carrying the defense at times this year, much like a defense that carried the offense a couple years ago. The balance has swung now, and we are seeing Tom Herman's strengths as a football coach really come to fruition with what this offense is going to be capable of, and how it can beat you on the ground, and how it can beat you on the air, and how it is led by a bona fide superstar, a guy who will at some point in the next 3 to 5 to maybe 10 years be seen as a legend at the quarterback position for the Texas Longhorns. The defense may start out a little bit slow. They may be frustrating at times this year, especially earlier in the season through the first 4, maybe 5 games, but they will eventually get their legs underneath them and they will be better performing by the last 3 to 4 games of the year versus what the 2018 defense looked like. It will look more similar to that 2017 defense, a defense that was loaded with guys who ended up getting selected in the draft that year and last year, and even a couple of guys who will get selected in the 2020 NFL draft as well. It's going to be a fun season, Longhorn fans. Get ready for it. You're likely going to win your first Big 12 championship since, what was it, 2009. It should be a fun ride.
You're calling it already. I do have one question before we get out of here.
Yes,
sir. What do you think Sam Ellinger has to do to get his number retired? I think all he has to do is get Texas to the CFP or national championship or something along those lines. Because I don't even think he needs a Heisman, because he'll have on his resume a Sugar Bowl, a CFP win. And I think that's really, I mean, Colt McCoy had something similar to that, and he has his number retired.
Yeah, what are the numbers that are retired right now for the Longhorns? Nobis, Earl, Ricky, Vince, and Colt?
And
I feel like those are the numbers.
Bobby Lane.
And Bobby Lane as well. So the common denominators there are national championship, or at least national championship game in Colt McCoy's instance. Colt McCoy was also a record setter in his time at Texas in terms of total wins collected by a starting quarterback in college football. So I think Sam Ellinger needs to either win a Heisman Trophy or get this team into the playoff and perhaps the national championship game to end up getting his number retired one day. And right. I think that both of those things are possible by his senior year.
Completely agree with you. And Also, it is very possible this happens. You have a special guy in Sam Ellinger, I believe. So, I think we're getting it off there. That'll be your Longhorn Nation podcast. That'll be your 4th and 5. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER or at the Texas of the Football Brainiacs.com. Trey Elling, my man, where can we find you?
You can find me at The Horn. If you're in Austin, that's 104.9 FM, AM 1260, 101.9 FM, or by searching for the Horn app in your app store. Just search the Horn Austin. You can find me there or at hornfm.com. I host the midday show from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., but we are up in all sorts of crazy tangents as well. We both grew up on Dallas-Fort Worth Sports Radio, and we'd like to think that our show is reflective of a couple of guys who were influenced by 1310 The Ticket up in Dallas. And I'm also a part of the afternoon show with Chad Hastings and Kevin Dunn that airs from 3 to 7. You can check me out on that radio station most of the day starting at 10 a.m. So thank you very much for that. And Will, thank you so much for having me on the podcast today, man.
No worries, man. And hey, 104.9, I know The Ticket's really good, but 104.9 has consistently good shows throughout the entire day. Especially the midday show with you and BK, man. I love that show. That, the Rodcasts, the afternoons with Chad and Kevin, that's a great show as well. I love all of it. Listen to all of it. Wonderful. If you're not listening to it already and you want to get your sports talk in for the day, you can't listen to us. Listen to them. That's going to be it for us. You guys can find us and our other podcasts on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere you guys can find a podcast. And on that note, we'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.